Ladies and gentlemen, it is July 27th. This is episode 6 of the Let Me Be Frank podcast. We want to dedicate this episode to our dear friend Brian, who can't be with us tonight. He's actually in the hospital dealing with some medical issues. So, Brian, we hope you get better soon. We dedicate this podcast to you, and we're looking forward to having you on the show again next week.
Our fearless leader, Brian Franklin. Get well soon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Brian, this one goes out to you. And I think Brian would love for us to start this week with a discussion of the Crosstown Classic here in Chicago. A little Cubs-Sox rivalry, a lot of energy in the cell last night. Pete, what do you think about how the season began?
Well, the rivalry that he aggressively was against the new format of in last week's podcast, I believe.
He was?
But, well, and he's also not very happy with the results. As of today, Sox are up 2-0, looking to win the series for the year, which is a strong moral victory in a season that has been fairly depressing for us White Sox fans.
If you're a Cubs fan and you're coming off a big series win against the Rangers, you played pretty well against the Mets, things were starting to turn around right after the All-Star break, this has got to be a shot to the heart, right? Losing one to the scrubby Sox?
It's pretty disheartening, I'm guessing. I mean, you're going to get shit on in your own city. And there's nothing worse than giving us Sox fans ammo to make fun of the Cubs. And we can take anything we can get this season, since we don't have anything. Our star pitcher just tore up our uniforms. What else do we have?
We'll get to Chris Sale in a second, Pete. But, again, game one walk-off victory for the Sox. After Cubs comeback in the ninth inning, Sox bullpen blowing another one. Fat Albers. You can always rely on him to make it interesting, Pete.
Yeah, I had to play a softball game while this was going on, and I saw the score was 4-2. And me and my other friends were just like, all right, they're going to blow it, absolutely. And when we were playing, news comes up, oh, it's 4-4. I honestly was not surprised. But thank God J.B. Shuck, you know, came through in the end and scored the winning run for us.
Yeah, so Tyler Saldino with that big walk-off single after that Matt Caesar error. Tough way to lose a ball game. Been there myself before. Never fun. But again, one play doesn't make a game. But I think we mentioned in the podcast last week how this was a series that was dying out. And Brian mentioned himself that it needed energy. He thought the old format would give it more of that energy. But to me, you know, watching the call last night, it seemed like there was a lot of life in the cell last night. It was a pretty lively crowd. You know, the commentators mentioned it. I think it was good, despite a different sort of format and only playing one four-game series this season.
Well, the four-game series is also what bothers me, is that it's looking like intense right now and like a fun series, but if it ends up as a tie, no one wins there. It's not satisfying at all. Who gets the Crosstown Cup at that point?
I think Brian was arguing last week that there should be no cup. I think he's really against the corporate sponsorships. But again, if you have a 2-2 tie, it's got to just revert back to whoever won it last season, right? But I agree. I think it's stupid to have only a four-game set. It's way more fun when you can go to the Cell for three games, go to Wrigley for three games. I loved how they had it at two different parts in the season, one in June, one in July.
And has interleague play not increased in recent years?
It has, because you have the odd number of teams now with the move of the Astros to the American League West. So, you know, I don't see this big issue why they can't have the two series. I think it's much better for the game. You get the teams also at two different points of momentum in the season. So, you know, if the Cubs and Sox are playing earlier in the season when the Sox are hot, that's a lot more fun of a series than it is right now.
That was a very diplomatic way of saying that the Sox are in a very bad down spiral.
Well, it's not hard for any casual fan of baseball to see that. It's been a rough year for the White Sox. Another wasted season. But let's start off with Chris Sale. Jersey meltdown last week. What is going on with this White Sox team? And can you, granted, it's probably not very professional, but can you blame Chris Sale for how this all went down?
Well, so he explained himself this week. I think it was yesterday. He said that he had told the organization multiple times that he did not enjoy playing in these old jerseys because they do have a strange collar, and he doesn't like altering his mechanics to be able to pitch at his best for his White Sox that he's been, you know, that he's been carrying all season and for the past few years. And he told them repeatedly that he does not want to pitch in them, but they didn't listen to his demands, and so they put out the jerseys for his start. And I mean, I wouldn't go about it this way, but he decided to take some action and tore up every single jersey that they were going to play.
I'm interested, how did he do it? Was it scissors? Was it his bare hands? How did he tear up these jerseys? I mean, this is thick material.
Did he bring in LaRoche's son to help him out?
Big Drake LaRoche having some beef of his own?
I mean, I like to think he's a pretty big country boy and using a nice, you know, hunting knife just to slice through
everything. An axe? I mean, how the hell is he tearing up this many jerseys that fast?
Did he ask for any of his friends on the training staff? Just like, yo, help me cut these?
Pete, I see Sale's point here about not wanting to alter his mechanics. And you mentioned it. He's been carrying this team all year with Quintana. Give Quintana his due, but I mean, what do you think? Did the Sox actually put jersey sales and PR ahead of winning if they continue to ignore Chris Sale's request to change these jerseys or at least move them to a day when he's not pitching?
Well, I think, okay, so I think there's two sides to the story. I think Sale is probably overblowing that or exaggerating the fact that he repeatedly asked for these jerseys not to be used. He probably made a passing remark that he didn't like using them. And the Sox, I'm guessing, by no means wanted to piss off their best player by leaps and bounds by having him play in the wrong jersey. But the Sox are in a weak position, in a position where they have to value their marketing, because they are by far the number two team in this market. They have to present themselves in the best light possible and do all these marketing campaigns that the Cubs don't have to do. So in a sense, the business of this baseball is way more important for the White Sox, but I don't think they absolutely tried to put it in front of Sale.
So was this just the straw that broke the camel's back? If you're Chris Sale, I mean, was this the breaking point? I'm sure there are incidents that we don't know about where Sale's been frustrated with, you know, the lack of a competitive team on the South Side for a little bit now. He probably feels that like he's wasted a few years of his prime on teams that have had high expectations, haven't panned out. I think we certainly believe that as fans, that, you know, the White Sox have wasted this gift of Chris Sale. Is this the breaking point for Chris Sale? Do they need to move on now?
Well, I also think he's frustrated at that he's only getting paid about $12 million over the next 3 years on an incredibly organizational friendly contract. And if you're the White Sox here, you're in a very tough position about trading him, because that incident will give teams pause about if they want to trade for this guy, because he looks like a psychopath. So his trade value is lower than what it would be. So I don't know the incentive to deal him right now.
But does this force the Sox to deal him? I mean, does he clearly has issues with the front office, with the way the team's being run? I think this is an indication that he wants out. I think he really wants to be out of Chicago. You could say what you want about the team-friendly contract. I think that helps his trade value. I think that alone, in addition to the fact that he's been an all-star caliber player, a great ERA, great statistics, in a tough competitive AL Central with the Tigers, the Indians, and the Royals over the last few years. You know, I think he wants out. I think the White Sox would either really have to make huge moves at the deadline to pick up a lot of pieces and show that they're contending, which I don't think they're ready to do. I don't think they should do in order to appease Chris Sale, or they got to get rid of him. I think this is a turning point for the Chris Sale tenure or saga, if you want to put it, in Chicago.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I'd say unless the Sox get a godfather offer, which I actually think they will get from maybe the Dodgers, who are putting their top prospect on the table for Chris Sale.
Okay, so let's address this. Supposedly, the price for Sale has been reported at 5 to 7 prospects, which is an ungodly number.
It's reasonable, though. See what Chapman just got from the Cubs.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, it's what the market is demanding. It's just something that we really haven't seen much of in the past few years. You haven't really seen a Cy Young candidate with a very team-friendly contract for 3 more years come up on the market, clearly expressing his desire, or maybe not his desire, but his frustration with the team he's on. Maybe he's pushing for a trade. That doesn't come up every day.
I mean, Boogie Cousins in the NBA is a similar situation.
Boogie, I would love to get Boogie Cousins and Chris Sale in a room for a little just therapy session where they can just vent their frustrations about their teams, because God bless these two. They've done nothing but perform on the field or on the court, and they've gotten so little help and nothing but organizational dysfunction behind them. You got to feel for these two guys.
Yeah, understandably, the frustration for them is understandable. And if, you know, Chris Sale gets traded, I blame him for nothing of what he's done for the White Sox, or to the White Sox. I wish him well. He's a very talented player, and if he does get traded, I hope we get a ton back for him.
Okay, so if Sale gets dealt, as a Sox fan, what do you want in return? You mentioned the Dodgers putting up their top prospect, the top pitching prospect in baseball, the young 19-year-old lefty, Julio Urias, throws 97 miles per hour. He's got great off-speed stuff. Had a little bit of a rough debut when he came up for a few starts this season, but overall, he's got a lot of talent, a high ceiling left. But what do you want that would make you happy as a Sox fan in return for a Chris Sale deal?
Well, it's hard for trades in baseball because if you're not a serious fan, you're not checking the prospects within organizations and knowing who you would like and who you think would pan out. And there's just so many players to keep track of. And so you're basically just hoping that and putting your trust in the front office for the White Sox that they can evaluate talent and that they get, you know, three or four possible studs, because chances are in baseball not all of them will pan out. So I want, you know, Julio Urias, he's an almost can't miss prospect, correct?
He's considered to be the next great young lefty in the game, which, you know, hopefully would be a replacement for Chris Sale. If I'm a White Sox fan, I'm very concerned about what you mentioned, the White Sox ability to actually evaluate talent, because they have proven time and again to just be completely inept lately with the ability to develop not so much pitching talent, but more position player talent. We've seen it with a lot of stud outfielders that have come up. Jordan Danks, for example, you know, Tyler Flowers, the catcher position. They've got these guys they've touted for so long, finally come up and really haven't panned out. Gordon Beckham is another great example. So I'm worried if I'm a Sox fan that what they're getting back for Sale may not be replaceable. That maybe Urias might be the only real option they get. And granted, he's a younger lefty, throws 97, seems to have a lot of potential, but 3 years of a team-friendly deal for Chris Sale, that's a lot to give up when he's already proven to be a Cy Young candidate. So I would be a little concerned if I'm a White Sox fan. Ultimately, Pete, final take, is Sale staying or going?
I'm gonna say he goes. I'd hate to say it, but I think he goes.
Do you think he's going to LA?
I think he goes to the Dodgers, yep.
We'll see. They can certainly use the help with Kershaw being out for an extended period. A lot of injuries on that pitching staff. We'll see how that pans out, see if the Dodgers make a move to try and catch the Giants in the West. But Pete, jumping across the city to the north side and the Cubs, they are appreciating their fancy new toy from the trade deadline, Aroldis Chapman. They paid a price for him, though.
Yeah, and not getting the extension agreement with him before completing the trade was a pretty risky move and a lot to pay for a closer specifically, but I think it was the right move for the Cubs to make, going all in on a World Series this year, which is what their organization and fans absolutely deserve.
Okay, so let's review what they gave up. Gleyber Torres, excuse me if I'm mispronouncing his name, 19-year-old shortstop, considered a top 30 prospect in baseball. Granted, he's blocked at the major league level by Russell Baez, a lot of good young infield talent. Billy McKinney, considered a top 100 prospect in baseball. He's an outfielder. Again, sort of a logjam at the major league level. Giving up Adam Warren, who they just got from the Yankees for Starlin Castro. So that deal is essentially null now. And Rashad Crawford, another mid-level prospect. So they gave up a pretty hefty haul for a guy they may only have for a few months. He also comes with a little bit of baggage, Pete. I mean, this whole domestic violence issue, suspended for 30 games early in the season, really didn't play that long with the Yankees. I think he enjoyed his stay there, but didn't really get to enjoy New York much. But there's a little bit of controversy coming up here now.
Yeah, I think, well, you brought up a good point that their infield and essentially all their positions are filled at the major league level. So it does make sense at that level to make the deal. But yeah, domestic violence is not a light issue. And though he was acquitted of the domestic charges, if I'm not if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. He was never charged at all, actually.
It does make it awkward for the organization to deal with that, because fans do feel that, I mean, people, rightly so, do feel that domestic violence is a big issue, and people should not be accepting of players who are accused of that.
I think teams have become a lot more socially conscious now in some of the moves they make, and it's been a demand on those teams from the fan bases, quite frankly. Domestic violence is something that you hear a lot about now. It's been a huge issue for the NFL in particular, and how they've both disciplined players and how teams have signed players or handled those sort of issues. So the Cubs, you know, ever trying to be the good guys of baseball, were necessarily cautious in making this deal. Now, there's a little bit of an interesting twist that came out about this story today. And over the past few days, Theo Epstein had come out and said that they had made a call with Chapman right around the time of the deal, had laid out their off-the-field expectations for him, and that call had really given them comfort and a level of confidence in Chapman to make this deal and to finalize it, that it was going to be okay, that he understood sort of the gravity of the situation, that he was going to, you know, be a responsible citizen, both, you know, on and off the field. Now, in his opening press conference with the Chicago media today, Chapman did not quite recall that conversation. He actually said that he didn't remember having it. Now, Henry Blanco, former Cub, current coach on the Cubs staff, is his translator, and they're sort of going through Blanco back and forth between Chapman and the media. Blanco said something to the effect of, well, Chapman got the call right after he woke up from a nap, he was sleepy, and he didn't really remember anything. But it came off as a little bit more than that in the press conference. Chapman was asked a few questions sort of about the issue, and he kind of came off a little bit nonchalant. He was smirking a little bit. He wasn't really seemingly that interested or that, truly acknowledging of the fact that this was sort of a serious matter. And he sort of played it off. And I think that call has got to have, you know, Cubs front office personnel kind of squirming in their shoes a little bit.
Well, this was such a softball question to answer from the media. No one would question that this conversation happened if he just said yes, and I agree to the off-field conduct that we agreed on, and it would have been done with. They would have said, okay, we have faith in Chapman, and now he completely undermined Theo Epstein. And so now there's a big question mark here. This guy's literally Kenny Powers in real life. Just throws heat and doesn't give a shit.
He really does not care. And I think that's come off as very evident in this. Granted, he was never charged, but he still was suspended for 30 games. I mean, that's not a tap on the wrist. I mean, this is a serious issue here. And if you're Theo, you know, and Joe Maddon too, you got to be a little concerned about this, right?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully the winning will, winning fixes everything. So we're hoping that, you know, his attitude stays positive during the rest of the season here, because they need him at the end of this bullpen.
I think it is key to note that Hector Rondon, current Cubs closer, converted 18 of 19 save opportunities on the season, was very willing to give up the spot to Chapman. So the Cubs organization clearly acknowledges the talent he brings and how he can affect their chances of winning. But let's say they don't win, Pete, this season. Do they want to offer him an extension? Or is he just a headache? Is he kind of like a Puig, you know, a guy who just, he's just too big off the field to, you know, be worth your while, your money?
Well, here's what I think. This came to me. Here's what I think we're not giving him the extension could actually come and be a positive for the Cubs. He now has motivation to be well-behaved and on his best behavior and play his best the rest of the season. He doesn't have guaranteed money the next 4 years. If they locked him up for those 4 years, he had no reason to behave.
Okay, so you're saying that this press conference, where he's not really acknowledging sort of the severity of his behavior, that's sort of a fluke, and that once now that he doesn't have guaranteed money, if they don't get an extension done, that's an incentive for him to really go and ball out the rest of the season, mm-hmm. behave off the field, benefit both himself and the Cubs.
Yeah, absolutely. What you're getting
at. Okay.
Contract year.
Yeah, absolutely. If they don't win, are they bringing him back? If they, yeah, they
I think it's all based on his behavior. I think if they're satisfied with how he behaves in the clubhouse and how he performs on the field, I don't see why not.
Well, and you mentioned it, winning does seem to fix everything. So we'll see. We'll see for Cubs fans. We'll see for Chapman if he can get his act together off the field, because he certainly has on the field. He's averaging a fastball of 100.1 miles an hour, which is just unheard of. He's already touched or broken his previous record at 105 for fastest. I mean, that's absurd, 105 miles an hour.
And he has the most pitches thrown at over 100 miles per hour since 2010. He's first at 1,658, and second place has 252.
It's not even close.
He's miles ahead of anyone else.
Literally. Literally, yeah. Miles ahead.
Wow. I didn't even mean to do that. That's how good we are
here. Yeah, so we'll see for the Cubs and how this really pans out for them. They paid a heavy price. I agree with you that it was the year to do it. This is their year. I think they'll have issues, sort of in the style of the Blackhawks. Maybe not quite with the success, but in terms of trying to maintain the talent that they have on their roster, it's going to be tough.
That lack of a salary cap is going to help out a lot.
Absolutely. But
their payroll is going to balloon in the next few years.
It may become the old Yankees. So we'll see how that payroll holds up.
They got a few championships, right?
We'll see. Winning fixes everything. Mm-hmm. But moving on, we turn to a little bit more of a serious topic. Michael Jordan has recently donated $2 million total, two individual million-dollar donations, to a few different organizations to address police shootings, police community relations. Pete, what are your thoughts on Jordan doing this? And he's been criticized in the past for not really speaking out on a lot of political issues where people think that he may have some say or some influence. So, one, what do you think of his stepping into the spotlight on this issue? And two, is he a little too late to the party, or is he doing something at the right time?
Well, I think the Banana Boat crew, supposedly, well, the LeBron James, Dwayne Wade,
Carmelo,
Chris Paul, them speaking out at the ESPYs, having their message, kind of pushed Michael Jordan to think that, okay, I need to say something too, since these athletes today are speaking, you know, using their voice for something positive. And I think it's a good thing. I think, you know, LeBron, arguably being the best player in the NBA, you know, the MJ of our time, is speaking out, and now Jordan feels compelled to do so as well. And while he isn't in the public spotlight as often right now, he did give $1 million to the International Association of Chiefs of Police newly established Institute for Community Police Relationships, and the NAA, and $1 million as well to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. And that legal defense fund for the NAACP goes towards the ongoing work in support of reforms that will build trust and respect between communities and law enforcement. So it's not just putting on both sides, you know, by covering both bases. It's both are focused on repairing relationships and fostering community between law enforcement and the black community, which I think is incredible. Like, it's two very good organizations to put his money towards.
I think you hit it on the head, Pete. I think he's put his money in the right place. You know, he hasn't picked a side. He hasn't said I'm supporting more heavily police, more heavily, you know, Black Lives Matter, sort of pitting those against one another. And I think if you look at his statement, he said that, you know, he was disappointed in the divisive rhetoric and how, you know, things have really fallen apart in that sense. And he mentioned, you know, being a victim of senseless violence himself, with his father being murdered in the early 90s. I think he brings an interesting perspective to this, and I think one that's very necessary, one that can be very influential. I think it is interesting that maybe he was silent for so long on it. It was interesting to note that Jordan brand athlete Carmelo personally said and emphasized it's good to see Michael put his money where his mouth is. And I thought that was interesting. Coming from a guy who's a lot lower profile, if you think in the grand scheme of things, you know, Carmelo versus Jordan, that he sort of called out his quote-unquote boss a little bit. And I think it's good that the Banana Boat crew took a stand at the ESPYs, was really encouraging social participation from some, you know, big potential influencers on this situation. noting the influence that athletes can have. Like you mentioned, you know, LeBron, biggest star in the NBA nowadays, he's got a global reach. You know, Kobe does as well, especially, you know, abroad. These guys have voices, very big voices in pop culture, and they can have a lot of say, particularly on, you know, younger generations. So I think it's good that Michael finally stepped up, broke his sort of, you know, code of silence on a lot of these things, and put his money towards a very healing cause and something that really works to bring both sides together. I thought it was really good, and I think other athletes should follow suit.
Yeah, and I also thought it was a good point that he brought up, that he said he recognizes that for many people of color, his experience with law enforcement has been completely different than others. He is, you know, an absolute outlier. And, you know, he's probably been, you know, used, police have been security for him for years now.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's a completely different experience. Yeah, and it's good that he acknowledges that. He's aware that he hasn't been in that situation in the past 35, 40 years.
And for him, like you mentioned, you know, he's probably been involved with both sides a lot more than a lot of athletes have. You know, being that huge, larger-than-life persona that he is, he's dealt with, you know, police, security guards a lot more than a lot of people. So maybe he just has some insights where other athletes don't, at least to that extent.
Yeah, so overall, just a good message from Jordan. I think the NBA is doing a lot of positive things when it comes to social justice. Related to that, the NBA moving the All-Star game out of Charlotte in response to their, not providing gay, lesbian, or LGBT community with the right to use the bathroom they identify with. So they took it out of Charlotte, and now they're strongly considering New Orleans. So that sends a message that they're not messing around with that shit.
No, absolutely. And this is something that you really haven't seen from the major sports leagues before. You see sports leagues taking a huge stand. And I think a lot of this maybe comes in response to the NFL's issues that they've had, both with domestic violence, you know, drug abuse, some of the things that the NFL has taken a hit for and not addressing with its players and not making a stand. I think that's something that the other leagues have learned from and they're really trying to adapt to. I think it's something that is really good because you have these leagues that have such a powerful influence, and the NBA has particularly strong influence on pop culture. Baseball maybe less so, even football maybe less so, but basketball is really ingrained with pop culture. Because
it emphasizes individuals.
Exactly.
And their voices.
And their voices, their ability to play. So the fact that the NBA is taking a lead on this, I think, is really a positive development.
And the WNBA has redacted the fines given to the players who wore the shirts after the Dallas shooting.
They have.
Which was following suit to the NBA's actions.
Yes. And you see the WNBA, NBA acting a lot in tandem. You know, I think it's just good that the social element of sports is finally really being drawn out in a positive way. You know, mm-hmm. We see a lot of the things that get emphasized and maybe aren't so good, you know, maybe some of the thuggish behavior of, you know, NFL players or, you know, we see the arrests or that kind of stuff from different athletes, but we finally get to see a positive message from a lot of these guys. And I think it's good. I think it's a positive development that'll continue on, hopefully, with a lot of the other leagues across the world even.
And the NFL definitely needs to learn from all this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Moving on, one of our favorite segments of the week, celeb tweets. Pete, you want to start us off?
So, not too much going on in sports still. We're still in July. Baseball, middle of the season. Football, preseason hasn't started. NBA is over. Olympics haven't started. So, I'm going to focus on the politics that have been happening, people have been consuming over the past year. And from after the debacle of the Republican National Convention and what I assume to be another debacle of the Democratic National Convention, comes a tweet from Donald Trump himself, the Donald. His tweet goes, "The invention of email has proven to be a very bad thing for crooked Hillary, and that it has proven her to be both incompetent and a liar." Now, I'm not going to get into the politics of Trump versus Hillary, but I am going to acknowledge that, think about how old our political candidates are now that they acknowledge the invention of the email.
I love the word invention with email.
The invention.
Not just the use of email, the prevalence of email, the invention of email.
Email's been around since what? Since before we were born, right?
Absolutely. I mean, in its most primitive forms, maybe late 80s, early 90s. We'll have to get an official number on that. But the invention of email, like it's the light bulb or the TV, the invention of email.
Yeah, I don't know. The Donald has got some this strange thing to say.
Always bringing the interesting takes. Another person who's always bringing the interesting takes, someone I mentioned last week, is Dan Heron. I love this guy. I mentioned him last week in my celeb tweet. I cannot get over his Twitter account. He's continuously bringing the heat. Okay, here's a tweet from Molly Knight, who is a reporter, often writes on the Dodgers. She tweeted, Dodgers 2014 rotation. Kershaw, distressed emoji, and ambulance emoji. Grinky, same thing, distressed emoji, ambulance emoji. Hyunjin Ryu, just a skull face, because he's had 10 MRIs, back on the DL, probably will never pitch in the majors again. Josh Beckett, it's a picture of a palm tree in a beach, because he's happily retired. And then Dan Heron tweets once a week. So that's her tweet, right? Dan Heron responds to Molly, saying, I went on a slip and slide after drinking multiple glasses of wine and injured my back the other day. So technically, I'm distressed emoji, ambulance emoji.
Oh, my God.
Dan Heron, since retiring, is a social media fiend.
This guy needs to get on television.
He really does. Oh, my gosh. He would be way better than anything they've got on ESPN nowadays. I would love to see Dan Heron on a segment. The guy is social media gold. Absolute gold.
Find a way, media. Get him on there.
Moving on. Our intern stat of the week. Pete, you got a couple good ones for us this week.
All right. I got a few good ones from our interns here. So, brought to you from MGA Reddit here. They found that the odds are the same of Andre Drummond being struck by lightning than making 13 free throws in a row.
I don't know what I'd rather see. Andre Drummond, the 7-foot wonder, being struck by lightning, or making 13 free throws in a row. As a Bulls fan, I don't like the Pistons.
Don't wish harm upon anyone, John. Come on.
I think Andre Drummond might do more harm to that lightning than it would do to him. The guy's a beast. But that is absurd that those statistics.
And there was the similar statistic for DeAndre Drummond making 15 in a row and being struck by lightning.
So it's just not happening.
No, it's not going to happen.
And if it does, God bless the man. Yeah. Either way.
Yeah, if he makes 13 in a row, dear God.
All right, you had another one.
And the second one is that Russell Westbrook has more triple-doubles in the past two seasons than the Philadelphia Sixers have wins at 29-28.
God bless Philadelphia. Also, God bless Russ, because he's probably going to rack up a lot more of those triple-doubles now that KD's gone. But let's hope for Philadelphia's sake that they can get a few more wins this year. I think they will. I think Simmons played pretty well in the summer league. I think that, you know, if they figure out which one of their big men to trade, get some talent, maybe in the wing position or another shooter, I think they can maybe make a run at an 8 seed this year. If a lot of the things align, if lightning strikes, not at Andre Drummond, but in Philadelphia.
That was a terrible joke.
I'll always bring the terrible jokes. That's my role here on the show.
But if the Sixers make the playoffs and the Bulls don't next season, we've got a huge issue here.
I don't think that'll happen, hopefully. I'm crossing my fingers. I'm saying extra prayers. I don't think that'll happen. But if it does, we have a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
We have a major, major issue in Chicago.
Flip for picks.
Flip for picks, 2016. We're trying to rebuild the Bulls here. Well, let's see. We'll see how Philadelphia does. My stat, bringing it right back around to baseball in the Chicago Crosstown Classic. The White Sox beat the Cubs on a walk-off last night. In the series history between these two teams, 10 of the first 70 games were won on walk-offs. That's a pretty big percentage. You're saying 1 in 7 games is a walk-off. That's pretty good. Exciting baseball. Last night, though, was the first time in the last 35 games that a walk-off had occurred. So it had definitely been a dry spell. So we can't blame the lack of excitement in the series solely on the new format. It was the first walk-off since 2009. Series definitely needs a little juice. Hopefully it continues. We'll see if the Cubs can come back and tie it up. But interesting to note that, you know, this has been a previously pretty electric series between these two teams. Hopefully it turns that way again, brings some exciting baseball back to Chicago.
Yeah, I expect to see some fireworks tomorrow at Wrigley Field with Anthony Renato taking the mound for the White Sox, who has not pitched since May 10th.
You never know. We could see. But speaking of fireworks, Pete, we have a top five segment for you that'll definitely be lighting up the scoreboard. In honor of Dennis Green, who coached the Vikings and the Cardinals, recently passed away. RIP Denny, you've brought us many happy moments as sports fans. But we decided that to honor him, we will present you with the top five press conference blow-ups. Coming in at number five, we have Kellen Winslow.
Yeah, I don't give a hell. It's about this you, man. I don't give a flying you know what about a ball. I don't give a damn. He'd do the same thing to me. It's war. They don't give a freaking you know what about you. They will kill you. They're out there to kill you.
Kellen, how do you
so I'm going to kill him.
Kellen.
You write that in the paper. You write that.
Kellen.
You make money off that. Nah, man, I'm pissed. All y'all take this down. I'm pissed, man. We don't care about nobody except this you. We don't. If I didn't hurt him, he'd hurt me. They're gunning for my legs. I'm going to come right back at him. F***ing soldier.
We thank you for your service, Kellen. Coming in at number four, AI does not like practice.
We sitting here, I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice. I mean, listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice.
Truly a legendary press conference. Coming in at number four, Jim Mora.
And that was a disgraceful performance, in my opinion. We threw that game. We gave it away by doing that. We gave them the friggin' game. In my opinion, that sucked. What's that? Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
Oh, playoffs. Well, coming to number two now, the legendary Mike Gundy's I'm a Man.
Where are we at in society today? Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40! I'm not a kid! Write something about me.
I can't wait till I'm actually 40 and I can just scream that.
I'm just going to yell at my kids that all day.
I'm a man! I'm 40! Come after me! But number one, rest in peace, the Honorable Dennis Green.
They're what we thought they were. We played them in preseason. Who the hell takes a third game in a preseason like it's bull? We played them in the third game. Everybody played three quarters. The Bears are who we thought they were. And that's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
Oh, man, rest in peace, Denny. I don't think his heart could take that kind of energy and enthusiasm anymore.
Dennis, you were who we thought you were.
Yep.
A great man, a great coach, will be sorely missed. We pray for you and your family at this time. But, Dennis, thank you for one of the best press conferences that we've ever seen.
And
certainly one of the most.
And I sincerely hope his obituary was ended with that quote.
They are who we thought they were.
Rest in peace, buddy.
Moving on, another weekly segment we love to do here. Pete, it is time to guess the player.
Oh, boy.
This one's coming from Major League Baseball. So let's throw my three stats at you. All right. This pitcher just beat the Red Sox for the first time in over 5 years. 5 years. That's including the playoffs. He is winless in his last 10 starts against Cleveland. A hot Cleveland team, but traditionally have not been. So 10 starts is a long time. He's a former number one overall draft pick. Who is this MLB player?
Can I ask for a clue?
You can.
Is he also in the AL East?
He is not in the AL East.
I was going to get CeCe Sabathia.
Oh, God bless CeCe. But he's got bigger issues with his weight right now. Another brief hint. He's had some interesting off-the-field issues, but not necessarily any criminal action.
Interesting off-the-field issues. For a pitcher, that's not criminal action. Well, that's interesting.
Keep him. So it's got to be an AL guy, right? Because he's playing Cleveland a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Just beat the Red Sox for the first time in a while. Former number one overall pick. And he's not from the AL East, so that narrows it down to two divisions.
Oh, man. I should brush up on my AL pitchers here.
Think of former Cy Young MVP candidate.
Former Cy Young MVP candidate. James Shields?
Big Game James does unfortunately not fall in this category. Actually, Justin Verlander. The guy you don't hear much about anymore.
Man. I mean, he is still dating Kate Upton. I'll give him that.
Those were his off-the-field issues. There were some questionable pictures of Justin Verlander leaked.
Okay.
But he just beat the Red Sox for the first time the other night in a 4-2 Detroit victory. First time in 5 years. I mean, this guy was dominant in baseball for a long time. Haven't heard much about him lately. He's had a few injury concerns, but he's winless in his last 10 starts against Cleveland. How can Detroit compete when your ace isn't even beating your rival?
Yeah, I mean, him, like our two aces of 5 years ago have fallen off a cliff, him and Tim Lincecum.
Interesting to see how, ace pitchers have short shelf lives.
Yeah, their peak is pretty early nowadays.
It's early and it's short. Short and sweet. Johan Santana, another great example of that. Next week, Pete, you will bring Guess the Player to me, and I'm sure I will have just as much trouble as we seem to have on this show. Moving on, our WNBA pick of the week is actually a little bit different this week because the WNBA is currently on its month-long break due to the Olympics. So we will keep you updated with the U.S. Women's National Team throughout their time in Rio, bringing you some stats, some updates as they go for gold.
And hopefully some good news out of Rio. I have only heard negative news.
Let's hope that we get some good news out of Rio. It seems to have been a long preseason up to the Olympics. Let's hope the actual Olympic season goes well. Now, Pete, it's that time of the segment where we talk about what we're looking forward to this weekend. I, myself, am looking forward to the PGA Championship at the lower course in Baltusrol, if I'm mispronouncing that, in Springfield, New Jersey. It's the final major of the season, Pete. We had a great major with the British Open a few weeks ago. I'm looking forward to the fireworks this weekend. Dustin Johnson is a popular pick to win. And I got to say, looking at his recent stats, the guy has been on fire. 14 top 10 finishes in his last 19 starts. Just one outside the top 30 since last September. He's currently in first in the FedEx Cup standings with 2,700 points, followed by Jason Day at second with 2,400, then Adam Scott in third, Jordan Spieth in fourth. A few hundred points out, it's not that close. So we'll see how that goes there. But will this be Rory McIlroy's first win of the season? He doesn't have a win yet.
I mean, I'm hoping. I love Rory, but I don't see it. He has. I mean, he played decently at the Open. I think he was 6-under. It was a top five finish, I want to say. But I mean, Phil, you couldn't beat Phil or Stenson in the Open. But
no, those guys were leagues.
No, but he looked fine. I think that he's been playing well as of late, and I'm hoping that he pulls it out.
I'm always intrigued by Rory because I want him to be good, because I want to see that sort of American British rivalry between Spieth and Rory. I guess we get some of that with Jason Day being from Australia and whatnot, but Rory's been disappointing me, and I think he's been disappointing a lot of people. You know, he had that stupid Achilles injury. He hasn't been playing well since then. It seems like it really derailed his upward spiral at that point. I don't know. I don't want to see another Tiger Woods scenario. And not that Rory was at the level of Tiger, but he was golf's big star at the time. He was really what helped golf get out of, you know, the Tiger cloud that it suffered for a little bit. I want Rory to be good again. I want more great rivalries. I want more rounds like we saw at the British Open where there's two guys, two stars gunning for it at the end, like Stenson and Phil. And I would love for those two guys to be Rory and Spieth, or Rory and Day, or just give me two guys that are really competing with one another. I want Rory to win, but I don't think it'll be this one. But Pete, what are you looking forward to this weekend?
Well, this isn't necessarily a professional sports, but there's been a tournament going on called the Basketball Tournament that has a $2 million purse that is now in the semifinals. And the semifinals are going on this weekend, and it features players like CJ McCollum and former NBA player Pop Spencer Bonsu.
Pav, so big favorite of ours when we used to play NBA 2K.
And so it has plenty of NBA talent on these teams. I don't know what the NBA players need with $2 million after all this money that was thrown around, but the semifinals are going on this weekend, July 30th. I believe that's the weekend.
That's correct.
Yeah, so you know, number one seed City of Gods is playing the number two seed Overseas Elite. And then in the other side of the bracket, Team Colorado is featuring Shannon Sharp.
Shannon Sharp?
And Alec Burks of the Utah Jazz.
Interesting. So current NBA players are allowed to play in this.
Yep, apparently.
I didn't think they were allowed to in the past. I had heard something about this.
I don't know why. And then so then they're facing the number nine seed, Always a Brave, the Bradley alumni, which feature Sam Maniscalco.
Okay.
Local legend here.
Local legend here in Chicago.
And Patrick O'Brien.
Okay.
So they got some talent.
So they definitely have the scoring ability. Interesting turn. I'm surprised that they let current NBA players play. I'm surprised the NBA teams let them play in this.
I don't understand. Like, just throw the Sixers out there. It's good practice for them.
They need the practice. This is probably better practice than the Summer League.
I mean, I watched the game over one of the games over the weekend. It was kind of garbage, but it's kind of what you expect from a pickup tournament.
Sixers need all the help they can get at this point. But we'll see. We will continue to follow that tournament and let you know how the semifinals end.
Fighting for the Bradley alumni there.
We are officially supporting the Bradley alumni on this show, so we'll see how they play this weekend. Thank you for another great episode. We're always open to your feedback, advice, tips, comments. Definitely love when the listeners interact with the show. Thanks again for listening. We'll come at you again next week.